Thank you. So, hi everyone. I'm Mosè Giordano from UCL.
I'm Jules from Ghent University.
So we will talk about how to accelerate scientific code using AI hardware and the Julia package React Node.jl. So you know that everybody, nowadays the AI hardware dominates the modern computing world. If you wait a few weeks, you can see some news about some big spending on AI from different vendors and different AI providers, also not just GPUs, also TPUs and other hardware. And also they affect the world markets when these things happen. So yeah, so there is lots of this compute available, but it's mainly used for AI, but we want to do also something else, like using it for regular old school scientific computing. So how do you use these accelerators? If you use Python, probably you rewrite it in JAX or PyTorch, if you have already some code. But we are Julia users. Julia is a compiled language based on LLVM. So this will not be an approach for us, so we need to do something else. But taking a step back, an important thing in modern scientific computing is to do automatic differentiation. And why this is important? Derivatives are everywhere in the physical laws or natural laws. So if you can compute derivatives very fast, you can accelerate your code a lot. And it's also useful for machine learning applications because you can do the backpropagation or Bayesian inference. And you can see here some applications like folding of proteins or reconstructing a Hello Kitty image or accelerating the black hole imaging from the Event Horizon telescope. Yeah, so for example, in this case, they were able to go from analysis taking 1 week on a cluster, but when they used automatic differentiation, they were able to reduce the compute time to 1 hour on a single core on a CPU. So that's quite a speed up. How automatic differentiation works in most pipelines. So you take your code, the source code, which could be written in C++, Julia, Rust, Swift, or whatever language you like. You apply the automatic differentiation on the source code, and then that's lowered into some intermediate representation of the compiler that can be optimized, and then you generate the native code. But this can be inefficient. A more efficient way to compute derivatives is the enzyme approach. Enzyme is an autodiff engine based on LLVM, which works after optimization. So you take your code, you lower to the compiler intermediate representation, you optimize it, and then here you apply the automatic differentiation, and then, possibly you can apply even further optimization to eventually get the native code. And why this is important? As a case study of how the enzyme approach speeds up derivatives, for example, take the normalization of a vector. Here you have this function which takes an input and output array, and you loop over all the elements of the input and the output, and you divide and you set the output array to the input array divided by the normalization of the input array. The problem of this is that you're basically computing the normalization factor in each iteration of the loop. The easiest thing to do is to just hoist the normalization out of the loop. But you need to remember to do this, right? You would like the compiler to do this for you. So if you do automatic differentiation before optimization, the problem is you forget to hoist the normalization out of the loop. You do autodiff, and so you get the derivative of your function inside the for loop. And so the cost of the derivative is O of n squared, like it was here. And after optimization, it's not possible to hoist the factor out of the loop anymore because it depends on the iteration. Instead, if you swap the order of the automatic differentiation and optimization, you get that you first do the optimization, so your friendly compiler can hoist the normalization out of the loop, and then the derivative, in this case, becomes a O of n derivative. So you get a much faster derivative, automatic derivative, by moving the autodiff stage after optimization. And the, as a scientific motivating problem that we use for applying all of these concepts all together was Oceanonigans. Oceanonigans is an ocean model written in Julia. It's a very fast, it has been used up to 768 GPUs and demonstrating very high memory and energy efficiency compared to other competitors. And you can also see some cool pictures like this, very high resolution of the ocean evolution on the globe. And about GPU programming via LLVM, which is, again, one of the most common compiler framework, the problem of doing GPU programming at the LLVM level is that LLVM IR is very low level. It doesn't have a good high level representation of the parallelism, which makes some optimization very hard or just impossible to do. And also, specifically for GPU programming, the problem is the device code and the host code live in two different separate modules. So you have the host code calling a basically black box on the device code and on the GPU, and there is no way to do optimization between the device and the host code. So you cannot, for example, again, hoist some functions out of the loop inside a device code because there is no communication between these two. And if you if we look more deeply at the scientific code, like in Oceanonigans, there are about 270-ish kernels which look like this, where you are doing basically stencil code. And this is like the most natural way to write the code if you take like the paper formulas. But if you squint very hard, you realize that these stencil code are actually convolution. And machine learning accelerators are actually very good at doing convolutions, like TPUs in particular were designed to do convolution very efficiently. So one way will be you rewrite your code to express this stencil code into convolutions, or you hope that your friendly compiler will do that for you. But again, this can be difficult to recognize this pattern, and if there are optimizations which require communication between the host code and the device code, like in the previous slide, this can be very hard to do. Instead, MLIR. MLIR is a compiler framework which is based on LLVM, but it's more high level. So it has a better understanding of structures in your code, and also parallelism, and crucially, in MLIA, the host code and the device code are actually in the same module. And so if you take this LLVM code that you raise into MLIR, then you can do the kind of optimization that we were saying before of like hoisting a function out of a for loop when you know that this is constant. And also, MLIR is aware of parallelism and so can do optimization in this way. And if you apply derivatives, automatic derivatives, autodiff at this MLIR level, you also get much faster derivatives, which, as we have seen before, can provide a big speed up to your application. And now Jules will talk about the Julia package, which brings all of this together.
Yes. So MLIR is very cool, but you need a way to actually generate it. So reactn.jl is a Julia package that compiles Julia code to MLIR using the then the MLIR code can be compiled using the XLA compiler. And we also have these nice optimizations on top, and we can do automatic differentiation. There's actually two ways to get MLIR from Julia code. The first is to take existing kernels and to automatically raise them to MLIR. So in this example, we have this stencil kernel. It's lowered to LLVM using the normal compilation flow. And then we have a pass that raises this to vendor agnostic MLIR operations. And at this point, we try to recognize scalar operations and group these together in these tensor level operations. And then we do additional optimizations. And so you can see throughout this compilation flow, in the end, we end up with a convolution operation. And this can be executed very efficiently on, for example, Google TPUs. The other way to generate MLIR is to use Reactant's tracing engine. So you can write a regular Julia function. And then at the call site, you can pass it special array types. So toArray creates a reactant array. And this will make it such that every function invocation with a reactant array operand will actually generate an MLIR operation in the compiled MLIR. So this approach doesn't only work for array operands. You can also have arbitrary structures. For example, in this function, there's a function that takes 2 points, and each point has 2 fields. And when you compile this, when you trace this to MLIR, the MLIR code will have flattened each point into its 2 constituent tensors. It's also possible to return structs. And in this case, the flattened representation will be returned by the MLIR code. And there's a bridge to Julia that will reconstruct the structure. It's also possible to trace control flow. So in this case, we've added this trace macro in front of a for loop. And this will make it such that there's a loop in the generated MLIR code as well. If you don't include this trace, it will actually kind of unroll the loop by tracing through each iteration and adding the operations. There's an asterisk there, because this is a bit of a flaky system, but we're working on doing this automatically, so generating these loops without the annotation. Lastly, some people might know that Stable HLO is a pure format. Each operation doesn't have side effects. So it's not possible for an operation to mutate its operands, while in the Julia code, this is possible. So for example, this function sets the first element of its operand to 0 and doesn't return anything. But in the traced MLIR code, this can't be expressed. So there's actually an operation that creates a new array where this first element is mutated, and then it returns it. And again, in the binding from Julia to the compiler backend, it will insert this result value into the original operand. This was just a very quick overview of what Reactant is capable of. But so there's more. There will be a lot of optimizations on top of the traced code. It's also possible to automatically distribute the execution. You can automatically differentiate using Antime, like Mosé already talked about. And I focused on the Julia frontend, but it's actually possible to do this with C++ code as well. So this is what we're looking at with Oceanigans. So we take existing Julia code from Oceanigans, and we compile it using Reactant, and then we can automatically distribute it on a very large number of Google TPUs. So we're still working on performance, especially for multi-node cases. We want to get this line down, but we're getting there. So yeah, I maybe won't go into too much detail on the conclusion to get time for questions, but Reactant is very cool and it's open source, so you can try it out. Thank you.
How reliable is the rating?
I think it's reliable. So Oceanigans has hundreds of kernels, and these are successfully raised. Other people are using it, and it works. And if there's a bug, you can report it. Or like if there's something missing in the raising pipeline, you can report it, and we'll add it.
How about the reactant lowers down into an MLIR dialect?
So Reactant lowers into stable HLO, and the question is whether this is like you can combine this with other dialects. The answer is not really. Stable HLO is like it's an MLIR dialect, but it contains everything you need. So you can also target different dialects, I think. Like for example, Triton. There's like some experimentation going on, but like stable HLO is the main thing.
Yeah, so the question was whether we can also target the MPI MLIR dialect. Yes. We haven't tested on a large scale, but the support is there to translate MPI operations on the Julia code, translate, like raise them to the MPI MLIR dialect. Yes. So the question is whether... the question is whether it's recommended to do mutation on arrays or not. I think it's actually good style. So especially... Reactant sidestep the Julia garbage collector because it does all the memory allocations on the MLIR level, so it doesn't use the Julia runtime. So in a sense, like in normal Julia code, you would like to reuse as much code as possible, so use mutation a lot. But you can still do it, and it's still fine, right? Because again, you want to add.
Yeah, maybe also, I think if you do mutation within a function, the backend compiler will actually realize in many cases that you can reuse the memory, so it will actually not like materialize too much.
Yeah, so it does the automatic donation, right? So that, like in stable HLO, there is this concept of donating an argument to a function to reuse it, and a Reactant is able to do this process automatically.
So, the question is whether if you have multiple functions that take a point, whether it needs to generate the code multiple times. So the code to unwrap and wrap will actually be cached, I believe, when you run it. But if you compile a Reactant function, you actually compile like the whole Reactant program, typically. So you only unwrap at the beginning and wrap at the end, so during execution you can call different functions without any wrapping happening.
But all have to be ahead of time compilation. Yeah, like take advantage
of the question is whether it's all ahead of time, whether you can use Julia's JIT. So you can use Julia's JIT if you redefine a function and you recall it with the @JIT macro to have it reactantified, it will actually recompile the function, which is kind of what Julia does as well. If you run a function, it ahead of time compiles it just in time.